Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
You're listening to a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. If you want to listen to us in real time, you can stream our show live weekdays at 9 and 11 a.m. Central. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
Turning now to historian Timothy Walch for his view of the late president. He's the director emeritus of the Hoover Presidential Library. Welcome back to the show, Tim. Good to talk to you again.
Good morning, Carrie.
When does a president's legacy really begin to take shape, and shape that is enduring?
Sure. There's a term that's sometimes referred to it in a president's life as the third term, and that is usually when he begins to plan and map out his presidential library and construct an exhibit that reflects on his life. And listening to you and Carlos, I recall being at the dedication of the Bush Presidential Library with President Bush, and he was a little embarrassed, and it kind of speaks to that point that you and Carlos were talking about, his reluctance to draw attention to himself or his achievements. And I think that is a direct reason for not having produced a presidential memoir as such. I do want to throw a film actually into the mix, a documentary, if folks have not seen it. It's called simply 41. It's actually the numeral 41.
Mm-hmm.
It's available on HBO and elsewhere. And it is essentially George Bush speaking about himself with a few questions. And it's about as close as you're going to get to George Bush, reflecting on his life and his career.
So the other thing I wonder about is, yes, the presidents themselves are thinking about how to shape their own legacies, but I'm interested in how the view of that legacy, when that sets in by the American people and I guess the world, I mean,
sure.
how much rear view mirror time do we need before we really begin to understand what that legacy was?
I think there's a kind of a gestation of about 10 to 15 years. Now, that don't hold me to the specific number of years, but it seems that we begin to look at our presidents more sympathetically about a decade or so after they've left office. There's often a period of time where there's still a fair amount of criticism that goes toward a president in just after they've left office. But folks will recall that when Harry Truman left office in 1953, he was still being vilified, and it took about 10 or 15 years for him to kind of recover his reputation, and it has only grown since that time. I think I'm not saying that in the case of George H.W. Bush, I think because he lived so long, he's the longest living of our presidents, that in effect time has gone on, and his reputation has grown since he left office, and he lived long enough to see his reputation recover. So that I think he I'm sure went to his eternal reward with a sense that he had done everything he could and was satisfied that he was the servant leader that he felt called to be.
You know, and Tim, you've actually brought up something that I was interested in, which is our former presidents live longer lives than they once did, and there is indeed now time for us to judge their legacies by the things that they do, you know, with the stature.
Sure.
Right? After
sure.
After the office. Go ahead.
Well, yes. Well, you can see in Jimmy Carter's life. I mean, Jimmy Carter has lived the longest time now as a former president of any of our presidents. And that record continues to add to it. And, of course, has accomplished so much because he had the platform of having been a president. And he's been so successful, he's really defined the office of being former president.
Hmm.
There's a little bit of irony in this because we're never going to know the full story of a president's life and career until all the records are available. And the sheer volume of material now with electronic records and information and national security and privacy issues, that the last records, for example, of even the Clinton presidency won't be available until the 22nd century. Wow. So there will always be a new biography, potentially, of all of our former presidents, even from the 20th century. So we do, as a public, look back with admiration on the lives of these individuals, as well we should. And we can see personal qualities in the life of George H.W. Bush that we would like to see in our own children and grandchildren. But it's also true that we won't know the full nature of the decisions he made as president until the 22nd century.
But you know, you've said something really important there, which is you can see the personal qualities to some degree in the post-presidential era, right? Because they're not so shadowed by politics.
Right.
I guess we come to understand the character of the people that served in these offices once you've removed the office.
Well, and you also then compare that president to others. Certainly the person who precedes the president casts the biggest shadow. And so you see in George H.W. Bush's presidency both the blessing and the burden of having been a vice president under a great president or near great president in Ronald Reagan.
Right.
And frankly, we need to remind ourselves that, of course, it's a very difficult task. George H.W. Bush was the first president since Martin Van Buren to succeed from the vice presidency to the presidency.
Wow.
Because all of the flaws of the president in office when you're a vice president seem to stick to you and none of the benefits. And so he accomplished something that was very difficult to accomplish. I have also heard from people who've been saying, well, he's the greatest one-term president in American history.
Mm.
And I guess my feeling would be, well, the truth is most people don't remember one-term presidents.
Hmm.
So, you know, if you asked any of your listeners to say, well, what do you remember about William Howard Taft or James K. Polk, they would say, I'm not sure. Or John Quincy Adams was a great one-term president, and, of course, he, along with the Bushes, the Adams and the Bushes are the two where you have fathers and sons as presidents. So, you know, it's very difficult to compare presidents, whether it's one-term presidents or two-term presidents, and to put them in order. Historians love to do this. But in truth, we have to look at George H.W. Bush on his own, and it is a remarkable life, as Carlos talked about. And it does not surprise me at all that he didn't write his memoirs, because, again, I think Dorothy Walker Bush was there looking over his shoulder saying, now, Georgie. And to be perfectly honest, as I'm sure Carlos would agree, most presidential memoirs, I know the campaign biographies are terrible.
Yeah.
But the presidential memoirs aren't very good, and if you need any evidence of that, read Lyndon Johnson's book, Vantage Point. He was a great raconteur, but his memoirs are terrible.
What about the Clintons? Even their,
Reagan
right.
memoir, American Life. You know, Jane Wyman was not even to be included in the book his whole life, and he was married to her for a long time. Well, they finally put her back in. And in truth, most of these memoirs are written over by others, and they're massaged because, as you suggest, every president, after they've left office, wants to polish their legacy, and they start by writing the memoir, and they want to make themselves sound statesmanlike. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, it strips it of all humanity. So I applaud George H.W. Bush for basically doing the letters. And the other thing, too, about those letters, he tens of thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands of these notes and letters were sent out every event he ever went to. He would send people thank you notes. And I can tell you, I was in dozens of offices where those thank you notes were framed on the person's desk. Mm. He won more votes by writing thank you notes probably than any speech
that
he ever
gave. That is something. Wow.
That was his mother. You know how we're always told as kids, now you write grandma thank you notes for that money at your birthday
right.
or Christmas. And in fact, that was Dorothy Walker.
We're talking with Tim Walch, if you've just gotten in on the conversation. He's Director Emeritus of the Herbert Hoover Presidential Library. The one thing we have not talked about was he had a wonderful ability eventually to laugh at himself and actually became friends with one of his impersonators. So, Tim, listen to this.
Good evening. You know, as I speak to you tonight, we're in the midst of the holiday season here. Normally a season of cheer, a time to rejoice at our good fortune. This year, no different. So much to be thankful for. Certainly not a time to panic. Take her easy there. Sure, certainly the economy is a little sluggish. momentarily a bit soft. Notice I didn't say recession. Not afraid to say recession, recession, recession. Heck, I'll say it all day, but I don't have to because we're not in a recession.
Boy, Dana Carvey really got the speech pattern, too. And I understand they become pretty good friends.
Yes, they did. And in fact, you're absolutely right. George Bush understood that you can't take yourself too seriously and you do need to laugh at yourself. And he had the self-confidence to be able to do that and understood and could hear that clipped New England phrase. I recall Jim Baker talking about a conversation he had with Bush in which Bush said that the values that he was campaigning on had been inculcated in him by his family. And Baker said, George, don't use inculcate. Nobody in Texas knows that word. And in truth, he had a clipped style. And even the word, for example, prudent, which not many people use, but that was a common, and you can hear Dana Carvey saying, not prudent, and it was George Bush. That was his style, but he wasn't embarrassed by it. And you're right. I think that he learned to laugh about it.
Tim, I was reading a commencement speech that he gave at his alma mater of Yale. And years later, he was still making references to the Dana Carvey impersonation. Yeah. I mean, that must have been painful in the moment. He knew the value of embracing that, right? And laughing along with everybody else.
Oh, absolutely. And in fact, a person who takes themselves too seriously, suffers as a result. And George H.W. Bush understood, and even understood when he was serving as vice president, that modesty was very becoming. And again, Dorothy Walker Bush, I often say that look to a president's mother for the values that you will see in the presidency.
Wow.
And strong mothers, whether it's Sarah Delano or Dorothy Walker Bush, shaped Nell Reagan, shaped the values of the president.
That sounds like it'd make a good show. We'll have you back to talk about that.
Yes, maybe Mother's Day.
Tim, thank you. It's really always good to have your perspective. Thanks for doing this.
Thanks, Gary. Love to be on the show.
Timothy Walch is Director Emeritus of the Herbert Hoover Presidential Library with us from Iowa City, Iowa. There will be special programming on Wednesday for the state funeral of President George H.W. Bush, and we'll give you details on that as we get closer.
This was a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. To add your voice to our discussion, you can call in at 800-242-2828 or tweet Kerri at @KERRINPR. And if you miss us live, you'll find all of our shows by subscribing to this podcast. If you have questions, you can email us at talk@npr.org.